Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Fixed Income Conversation Corner podcast series right here on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Joining us for the conversation today, glad to welcome back from the UBS Chief Investment Office, Leslie Falconio, Head of Taxable Fixed Income Strategy for the Americas. We are pleased to be joined once again from our partners at Angel Oak Capital Advisors by Clayton Trick. Clayton serves as the Head of Portfolio Management of Public Strategies for the firm and is joining me here today in our 1285 podcast studio. So with that, Clayton, Leslie, thank you for spending some time with our listeners, our clients. Leslie, I'll now pass it over to you to lead today's conversation with Clayton.
Thank you, Dan. I really appreciate it. And Clayton, it's so great to have you back. I mean, you've been a great partner. And I know that, you know, I think since the last time we spoke, and I say this, you know, and, you know, with a little bit of joking, a lot has happened, right? We have a lot of volatility. A lot of that uncertainty is kind of uncertain. But, you know, I know that this conversation will be really great for our advisors and clients. So I do appreciate you taking the time to speak with me.
Yeah, Leslie, I was just going to say a lot has happened. Not everything has changed, but lots happened. So thanks for having me on again.
That's absolutely true. So let's really dive into this in terms of, you know, and you and I are both familiar with sectors that, you know, can be interest rate sensitive, some more than others. But, you know, when we think about this year, and we think about the first, say, 2.5 months of the year, right, we've had, you know, interest rates, even say the 10-year, we would go to up to 480, down to 410. You know, these are all in very short period of times. So we've had these moves, you know, given the fact we have so much uncertainty regarding political policy, you know, from now until April, and even, you know, for the next 6 months. How has, as we almost end the first quarter, how has the assets class performed? You know, how are you feeling about fixed income right now, and just in general?
Yeah, Leslie, we actually wrote about kind of a lot of these themes in the outlook this year, where we mentioned that, you know, stocks in our view were pretty rich. You know, they could get richer, but overall they're pretty rich. And so far we've seen equities down, you know, pencil of the day about 5%. On the year, on the fixed income side, we've seen positive performance, and it's been more in areas like duration. We saw a big rally within February. We expected that fixed income would have a very good year this year, especially relative to areas like U.S. stocks. And the areas we've favored going into the year that I think is, you know, quite similar to some of the asset classes that you've mentioned in your pieces, you know, has done quite well. You've seen mortgage-backed securities, for example, up about 2-3% through early March. And, you know, high-yield corporates, you know, while positive on the year, not up as much. So things have kind of so far played out as we, you know, as expected. And one of the expectations was really that, you know, volatility would be high. And so investors should really look toward areas that, you know, is pricing in a lot of that potential volatility, and fixed income's had a good start to the year.
Well, you know, I think, and I want to get this, we'll get into this a bit later as well, Clayton, because I mean, particularly as we've seen this volatility in the equity market and how resilient, actually, I think part of the credit market's been, both in terms of securitized and corporate. But, you know, first I want to just touch upon, you know, when we think about when we first entered the year in January, everyone was talking about, you know, the 50 basis points cut that the Fed did in September and the fact that interest rates had risen, you know, even though they had cut that, you know, total of 100 because reacceleration of inflation over and over again. And once again, the fixed income market, it seems, is just shifting sentiment a little bit and looking more towards that growth side. When we think about the monetary policy and what might happen with monetary policy going forward, how are you guys viewing that right now versus this inflation versus growth tug of war and how the Fed might react to it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think last time we talked, it was right ahead of, you know, the recent cuts that we actually had in the second half of 2024. And we really felt that the Fed was becoming too restrictive. You know, last summer, inflation was continuing to come down, but they continued to keep the Fed funds rate, you know, in the mid fives. So we're getting closer and closer to that, you know, 3% real rate on the front end that becomes, you know, a very, you know, kind of dangerous level for the United States fixed income markets and credit markets. And so they did recalibrate, you know, got it down about 100 basis points. So that's, you know, right in line with what our expectations were for the second half of last year. For 2025, we do think the job's not really done. We are continuing to see a slowing of the U.S. economy. So the soft landing, definitely came in and mission accomplished there from the FOMC. Yet, data is continuing to slow. Early this year, we got the initial kind of turn in the consumer on retail sales. And if you look at GDP for the fourth quarter, the consumer was the bright spot. If you didn't have, strong consumer spending, we would have had a negative GDP print in the fourth quarter. So if the consumer does, get a little bit spoofed here and we do see a slowdown in consumer spending, we think the Fed is right to really think of the growth side of the equation. So for later this year, when it comes to Fed policy expectations, we do think the Fed is going to continue to lower rates marginally. And it's really not that they're trying to be more accommodative or cut rates because of a large potential recession. It's really to just reduce how restrictive they are. They did it last year, but there's room to get to a 3 handle on the Fed funds rate, more likely in the second half of this year as we get a little bit more clarity on the DC and tariff policy. So that should be good for U.S. markets. And again, that's another reason why we're constructive on U.S. fixed income when you have a Fed that is more in a cutting bias for U.S. policy versus, we think the bar for a hike is extremely high right now.
That's interesting to your point, Clay, because our thoughts as well has been that the Fed will likely only cut twice in 2025. And it was just, in January where we saw the markets put almost a 15-20% probability on a potential hike. That's never been our call. We've never been overly dovish in terms of the Fed having to become overly accommodative simply because we don't believe there's going to be a recession in 2025. We still look for 2 cuts in June and September. But I do think that what's happening now, and I think what we'll see, is that kind of continuous momentum shift in terms of narrative, right? Because we're seeing it again. We first started with inflation, now it's growth. And I just don't think that mix of inflation growth narrative is necessarily over. So it's going to, in my opinion, create a lot of opportunity in terms of the fixed income side. One thing I do want to just, which is a great leeway to, I want to talk to you about is some of this policy and how some of these policies might sort of, impact fixed income, particularly, I'd love to hear your thoughts on whether it's, GSE reform, what you think some of this policy implementation might do to rates or fixed income, in particular, because we've had a lot of questions on that. And also, too, do you believe that Bessent is really following that tenure, looking at housing affordability, looking at that mortgage rate? How are you sort of assessing everything that's come through in terms of policy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure, Leslie. A few things to unpack there. And so I'm going to hopefully, hit on a lot of those points. And so, from DC, Bessent, reiterating kind of the focus on long end yields, trying to bring down borrowing costs for, households as well as businesses. And so they really turning their attention to getting long-term yields lower as opposed to the expectation going into the change in administration was, are they going to put pressure on Powell, right? But Powell the Fed focused on the front end versus they're saying the long end. And if so far this year, they've actually been able to bring down the long end. A lot of that's been created from, a lot of the, kind of back and forth on trade and tariff policy. So that's created a lot of volatility and it's brought long end yields lower and thus it's brought mortgage rates lower, which should be good for housing affordability. On the GSE reform side, this is probably one of the areas that we don't think is going to make a big splash if there is big changes in GSEs, if they end up going out of conservatorship and actually become fully privatized. Like I do think that that's just the area that the administration has the most direct impact on. And so within GSE reform, there's effectively kind of 2 things that have to be accomplished. One is they're undercapitalized, Fannie and Freddie specifically, so they just need to either raise capital through a massive IPO or they're just going to have to build more equity through retained earnings each year, which actually would take about 10 plus years, and that's obviously a lot longer than what the Trump administration would want to do given the 4-year election cycle, obviously. So within that context, you would probably have to grow the capital, potentially do an IPO, And then have that guarantee on existing mortgages. And we think that there would be some sort of guarantee on existing mortgages that were guaranteed through the Fannie and Freddie programs. So that's kind of the biggest hurdle and the biggest question mark. That being said, we don't see an environment where there isn't some sort of guarantee for Fannie and Freddie mortgages. So much of those mortgages are really owned by banks. And so you would need to have some sort of guarantee on the follow if they were privatized. So we think that something in GSE reform could definitely happen. You know, our probability was really low a few months ago. And I think, you know, day by day, we're actually increasing the expected probability. There is some large GSE reform package later in the 4-year cycle, but don't see it as a big risk for the mortgage market. You can actually see that through the capital markets pricing. So through the preferred purchase program, you know, the valuations of those bonds, right, that Bill Ackman refers to, those have been going up. Those equity positions have been going up in value. So the probability has been rising in the equity side. On the bond side, you haven't seen, you know, volatility in mortgage bonds. Actually, spreads have come down. So the bond market's not really pricing in a higher risk to the mortgage market as GSE reform probabilities rise. But on the equity side, it is growing. So I think the market's actually pricing that pretty well. One more thing on the tariff note, if we do end up having a little bit higher or firmer inflation here, which we think, you know, shouldn't happen over the intermediate term, like shelter inflation is still coming down. But if we do have some higher inflation due to tariff policy and these one-time increases, you know, higher inflation is positive for real assets like homes, like autos. So that is actually a very good backdrop for mortgage credit in particular. And so we see much more direct impacts in areas like corporate credit, but where it does affect, you know, our areas of the markets like mortgage credit, GSE reform, those are really the implications.
That was a great summary, and I really appreciate that. And actually, we feel the same way. We're asked a lot about GSE reform simply because it's like this headline risk that keeps coming up again and again. And, you know, it's our view is, you know, as he goes to the midterm elections, there's many other things that he has on the docket that are playing much more of a priority for him. We really don't think it's going, you know, during the entire 4-year term, maybe 50-50, but, you know, we just don't think it's something that is, you know, likely over the next couple of years. And as, you know, we know, there's a lot of operational risk to that. There's a lot of, you know, things, you know, in terms of affordability as well. I mean, the lack of affordability right now is not because of GSE reform. So I think that one of the things that is important for, I think, because it does. It gets a lot of headlines. People are a bit concerned. And I want to ask you with that, Clayton, that just for our listeners, when we think about agency MBS, right, and the non-agency, you know, how's your firm sort of, you know, playing the two sectors, right? Because, you know, we actually like them both, where we have more of a weighting in the agency MBS side just due to liquidity right now. But how are you viewing both of them right now in terms of value and opportunity?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we see value and opportunity in both agency and non-agency mortgages. You know, agency mortgages being pools originated and then guaranteed by Fannie, Freddie, and Ginnie Mae. You know, first off, agency mortgages are attractive on a risk-adjusted basis to treasuries. They're historically attractive versus investment-grade corporates. And even on a risk-adjusted basis, we would say it's attractive versus high-yield corporates. And so while that basis and that valuation is attractive, means you're getting excess return over treasuries to be owning those assets. It's also a great volatility inducer in a global asset allocation framework as well. When we see bouts of volatility like we saw last August, like we're seeing today, we see, you know, valuations on high yield and investor grade corporate bonds being much more volatile than valuations on the agency mortgage market. So one, we think it's cheap, but also within the context of correlation of other asset classes and fixed income, agency mortgages, you know, we think will definitely outperform, and we continue to see that. So investors get that higher yield as well, and the benefits from diversification. For non-agency mortgages, there's two things. We think about allocating to the credit markets through a combination of fundamentals and valuations. What's fascinating in the non-agency mortgage market is you actually have those aligned. Typically, when valuations are cheap, it's because there's higher risk in that market. We actually see kind of the opposite. We think housing fundamentals are really attractive for debt investing, right? So there is so much equity in U.S. homes. We have not seen the credit box really expand much in the housing finance markets like we've seen in the corporate markets. So fundamentals are really good as a bond investor in the housing market, and valuations are actually cheap. That's pretty rare, and that's why we think it warrants, you know, higher than normal allocations to that space for credit investors.
Let's sort of extend on that a bit, because I do want to dig a little bit deeper also, too, in terms of some of the, you know, opportunities that you see within fixed income. But, you know, we also have to, you know, talk about the pockets of vulnerability as well. So let's start with the opportunities first. I mean, we talked about, you know, the housing, MBS, non-agency. What do you think about the consumer, the ABS market? Anything that you think in terms of the fixed income side that you see is, you know, has potential to either generate total return through carry or spread compression now to the end of the year?
Yeah, so overall, from a carry perspective, we see that basically across most fixed income sectors, right? So from treasuries to agency mortgages to corporate credit, you're getting, you know, much higher all-in yields than we've been getting really since the great financial crisis, except for a few, you know, quarters here and there during volatile times. But all-in, you're getting really high income. As far as spread compression, so price appreciation through spread tightening, we only see that within a few sectors, really, for 2025. It's primarily in, first off, agency mortgages like we discussed, but then a few select areas of high-quality investment-grade areas of non-agency mortgages, asset-backed bonds in particular, are kind of our two favored areas. 2024 was driven from a performance perspective in our markets from basically double B and single B rated mortgages, asset-backed bonds, CLOs performing extremely well. That was really good for, you know, benefit for performance across our strategies. But this year, where we see the spread compression potential is really more in investment grade sectors. So investment grade bonds within mortgages and asset backed is really where the value is compared to corporate credit. We don't see as much spread compression in below investment grade areas of the market. After last year, it was performed well, as well as, you know, we see a lot of volatility this year continuing. So we think investors should really focus more on investment grade sectors to try to get that spread compression. But income should be a key driver for performance this year for fixed income. And that's really the case across most markets. It's really about getting the credit selection right.
So how do you feel about, like, when you think about, you know, these, let's just say these pockets of vulnerability just very quickly, do you find, like, from, you know, the clients that you speak with, is there a particular concern that clients have, or do you find that there's just too much risk on, if we should say, right? And one of the reasons why we like the securitized side, one of the reasons why we like agency MBS is because, you know, obviously they do have a little bit lower correlation to the equity market. But what are your clients sort of like discussing with you, or what are the biggest conversations that you have in terms of potential either worries, or are people taking risk off here?
Yeah. Some of the areas that we think are more vulnerable are areas that actually had really good performance the last couple years and are historically rich. So some areas like that would be floating rate, high yield credit. So areas like bank loans, as well as some areas of CLOs, where, you know, we actually think the credit in high quality CLOs is quite strong given the structures. But in a falling rate environment, falling SOFR environment, coupled with a slowing economy, that's the area that you can see volatility in those bonds and not get the duration benefits of a fixed rate asset. So we think that is an area to be a little bit more cautious on. And again, why we favor kind of short duration, fixed rate areas of mortgage-backed securities, for example. And the second area that we think is vulnerable is areas where you're taking, you know, a little more constructive views within kind of the subprime consumer, if you will. The subprime consumer has a higher percentage of their wallet that's more sensitive to these higher inflation figures, right? So homeowners have really benefited from the rise in home prices the last, you know, 5+ years, versus the renter is not getting that on the asset side of their balance sheet, but they have a much higher rent cost at a time when, you know, wages at sometimes in 22 were not outpacing rent. So we think that is the consumer that is more sensitive to a change in the soft landing narrative. And so we tend to try to focus on, at least within consumer markets, either it be securitized credit or corporate land, the areas that are more focused on, you know, the higher income or the middle income consumer versus the subprime consumer that is much more sensitive to these higher levels of rents and have a higher percentage of their wallet in those items.
You know, Clay, this has been really, I appreciate it so much for you coming on, because I love the perspective that you're able to give. That's just not just about the corporate credit side, but also about, you know, the MBS and securitized side, which, let's be honest, that's a big core of our, you know, growth in the U.S. I do believe that housing and home ownership is going to be a spotlight going forward. You know, I do believe that, you know, our expectation is the mortgage rate comes down a bit, but I do think that side of the, you know, growth in terms of growth contributors has just been not a big of focus, because everyone's been on the corporate high yield side, which again is obviously very important, but it's great to get the perspective in terms of the value that things like non-agency, that agency MBS, and just securitized has overall in terms of a very well diversified fixed income portfolio. So thanks again for your comments. I really appreciate it. And I know the next time you and I speak, we're going to say again, a lot has changed. There's a little uncertainty, but I definitely look forward to it. So thanks very much.
I do as well. Thanks again for having me on, Leslie. Always enjoy when we have our conversations.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliates. The views and opinions expressed in this material by external guest speakers are those of the author, speaker, and are not those of UBS, its subsidiaries, or affiliates. Accordingly, UBS does not accept any liability over the content of this material or any claims, losses, or damages arising from the use or reliance of all or any part thereof. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient, and is published for informational purposes only. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.